Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
Hello and welcome to The Great Indoors, the podcast which reveals everything you need to know about interiors and how to make it really work for you in your own home. I'm Kate Watson-Smythe.
And I'm Sophie Robinson.
And we'd just like to say a huge thank you to John Lewis and Partners for sponsoring this podcast. Now, what's this about a blanket that hugs you, Sophie?
So, breaking news. It turns out John Lewis are the first high street retailer to launch these weighted blankets, which are filled with glass beads. So, when you lie under them, or wrap them around your shoulders, it feels like a gentle hug, helping you feel more relaxed and snuggly.
That's the most extraordinary thing I've ever heard. Mind you, sounds good for nights in front of the telly when the mad husband is out.
Talking of extraordinary things, I am currently standing in a really extraordinary space. I've totally fallen in love with this house already, by the way, because it's time, dear listeners, for our very first guest of the series. Today, we are recording in the home of none other than Michelle Ogundahin, the writer, TV presenter and award-winning former editor-in-chief of Elle Decoration UK. Now, she's fresh off the set of the BBC Netflix hit interior design show Interior Design Masters, of which has been discussed on this podcast.
Yeah.
And she's currently writing her first book. And she's very kindly agreed to invite us into her beautiful home. Michelle!
Hi!
Hello.
Now, it's fair to say you're a bit nervous about having us round. We have been sitting on you, haven't you, trying to get an invitation to your home, desperate to speak to you.
And I know, here we are. It's a kind of slightly weird thing, isn't it? I think it's because, like, my home for me is not my work. It's just my home. And it's not particularly photographable, I think. It's
I would disagree with that already, listeners. It's beautiful.
I don't post it on Instagram. It's not out there. It's not up for kind of discussion. It's because it's very personal, really. And it's to me, home is absolutely about how you feel. And so it has to be a very personal expression of yourself. And so in that way, you come into my home, you are coming into me, as it were.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite distinct from kind of the work I do. Although I would never, ever put my house up to be photographed and put in a magazine, because I find it's too intimate, actually, because I've really taken time to craft this. Every single thing in here is really means something to me. It was either a gift or bought or given, or it has some kind of resonance. And so it's just...
And yeah, I can say your design eye is absolutely everywhere. So this isn't a minimalist house. This is this an arts and crafts architect building?
No, it's an old Regency house. It was built in 1821. So pre-Georgian even. And it does look a bit like the sort of thing you'd find on the front of a chocolate box.
Yeah,
on the front. Because it's like, it's super symmetrical and it's like a really sweet, gorgeous little cottage with a little portico and the little hanging baskets, and there's even the passion fruit flowers up the walls and stuff. But inside, it has been kind of brought up to 21st century.
Yes, it's quite traditional looking and fabulous parquet floor. The colour as well, it's like this ebony colour. It's really stunning.
There are
and
about
is this
20
old parquet
samples.
Then? So this is not, is this engineered.
It's not reclaimed.
Wood.
It's not engineered. No, it's they're hand laid. So each little board was sort of laid by hand
in a herringbone pattern,
exactly, yeah. Sort of separately, and then they were stained. And it was Ecora, the company, who was so patient with me because I was like, no, a bit more brown. Ooh, no.
Oh,
no,
really?
A bit more dark. Yeah. No, not quite that dark. No, a bit more dark. No, maybe, you know, backs and forwards we went just to get the sort of the right colour that felt right, because I wanted it dark but not black, but I didn't want it brown either.
You obviously deliberate, but it's not through uncertainty. It's because you kind of know what you want and you've just got to get there.
Well, I don't know. You know, sometimes you kind of don't know what you want until you see it, do you?
Mm.
So but you know how you want
well.
To feel, don't you? So, I mean, I knew I wanted it dark and I kind of started from there and I knew I wanted parquet. And then it was just playing with it until you kind of said, that one's the one
you
I
see,
want.
See, that's really good. I'd get to a point and I'd just go, I don't care anymore. Just do it and leave my house.
Oh,
and
no,
then 3 months later, I'm like, I don't like it now. And how does it stand up to two dogs crashing about?
Well, pretty good.
Well, I mean,
yeah,
it looks great, yeah, it but does. You might tell me you did it last week. I want to talk
in here
because...
this is the main social space.
In this space, you have, and you were, I think, a champion of Anaglypta wallpaper, and I've totally copied you.
Excellent.
I've got Anaglypta, and I love it, and I've written about it before on the blog, and people have gone, oh, no, you know, that's my granny's house, that's student digs, and people are quite resistant to it, but I think it's fabulous. I still think it will come back more. So you've got it as a panelling, haven't
yep.
you? And then you've papered between the panels.
Yep.
And it's a, you will hate this probably, but it's a very sort of on trend sort of greyish lilac. What colour is it?
I suppose I call it bruise purple.
Because
yeah.
that's
exactly sort of what it is. It's Archerite by Little Green. And what's quite funny is originally it was all painted in, oh gosh, I've forgotten the name of it, another colour by Farrow and Ball, and it was just a bit too pink.
Was it Brassica?
Yes, exactly.
I remember.
Beautiful colour,
but
just a bit too pink.
Well, it just was kind of just slightly off.
It bugged me. Of course, no one else would even notice, but I was just like, it's just a bit too pink against the curtains. And then so I found Archerite, which just a little got like blue undertones.
It's quite a restful colour, isn't it?
Yes.
And the curtains match it, so thank God she's got floor-length curtains.
Oh, yes, floor-length
curtains which match. And then beautiful sort of, it looks like foxed mirror, but I think it's wallpaper above. So two different sorts of wallpaper.
So there's lots of texture going on. We've got the velvet, the anaglypta, the sort of fox mirror effect.
Yeah, well, to me, walls are like your biggest palette that you can have in your home. And so I think it's such a shame when you go into houses and they've just been painted one colour throughout, skirtings and covings as well, and that's it, done. It's like, to me, it's like, this is your like
sort of
play
canvas.
Pace.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so I always say you should start with the envelope. So you start with, first find a house with good bone structure and then start with the walls. But mostly people will buy a thing.
Yeah.
And try and start with that. And it's absolutely the wrong way around. So here, I play with the walls. I mean, one of my favourite things is if you actually duck down slightly, can you see there's a little inch strip?
Oh, cheeky strip of mustard.
Gold. Yellow.
Gold mustard.
Oh, yes, it's the mustard, which you'll see that pops up again in the ceiling over in the kitchen.
So that's the gap between the top of the panelling and then the bottom of the shelf, which
the
as I
shelf.
Stand here at my normal height, I can't see it. But actually, there's a chair in front of it, or if I was sitting at the
or
table...
Or if you were 8 years old.
Or if you were 8 years old. It's been a while. You can just see there's that little flash of colour, and that's the detail, isn't it? It's the
which
considered
is just,
detail.
It's just fun. I mean, one of my great inspirations is actually Sir John Soane's house, because he was just a real tinkerer. You know, he started off with a kind of like one little sort of terrace and then he sort of extended a bit and then added a bit and then knocked through a kind of like roof light and then added another bit. And I just
are you a tinkerer?
That. I'm a tinkerer. Because I'm forever sitting here and thinking, I wonder what it would feel like if. And then, you know, just sort of playing. And I think I was sort of sitting at the dining table and thinking, I should put a little stripe of mustard under there. But the reason it all hangs together is because there's one palette, Yes. And I'm a bit kind of like fastidious about the palette. So I think you can do tones within colours, but there's one palette, one set of colours, one set of materials from like kind of metals to woods to stones to even the tiles. And then that repeats through the whole house.
Yeah, I've noticed that. You've got the lovely details. White Carrera marble table, which is then repeated.
Not Carrera marble. No. Arabascato. Look, see, it's got the
cream. Oh, no, marble.
Cream and the thing.
She's lost her marbles.
I love it. This is, it looks like, and I think I've read, that you love the Eero Saarinen tulip table.
I think they are literally the most perfect table. And I love the fact that the designer designed them the way they are with that beautiful kind of single pedestal leg, because it was to clear the slum of legs that he would see underneath tables.
No one wants a slum of legs underneath.
Which is,
table.
You know, when you've got four legs on chairs and surrounding another table. But I just think they're so elegant. And so I've actually always had one. But this one, this top, was a kind of like birthday treat to myself, because it is, if it didn't have all your crap all over it.
All our paraphernalia on top.
I'm just going to have a cup of tea off the table then.
It's the most beautiful kind of just thing, and so you just don't need anything else. But also, it's really super tough and durable.
They are an investment piece, though, aren't they? Oh, they've been on my wish list for quite a long time.
It's forever, forever. And this marble, it won't degrade. You know, this is it. This house, and also the fact that I love, say, built-in furniture. I mean, my last house had built-in furniture as well. And when you sell it, I sell the whole lot.
Yeah.
Everything stays. There's very few actual pieces of furniture in the whole house.
So that table, so there's the marble fireplace. And then we're moving to the back half of the room.
Are we moving?
We're moving.
Oh, we're here.
So we're moving now to the sort of sitting room area, and it's a sort of, what do we call it? Is it a row of floating cupboards, basically, on the wall?
It's like a floating sideboard.
Where's the telly, Michelle?
There.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no, is that the frame TV?
Have you got the frame?
Yeah.
Oh, that is so clever. Yeah. So what we're looking at is a beautiful painting of some peaches.
You could change them, because it has been like a kind of a single Japanese bowl for a while, but I actually picked that this morning because I thought that's quite nice.
I really love it. So otherwise you've got no big black screen in here.
No. And you can actually literally physically change the frame as well. So this is a white frame, and then the pictures on either side were framed to match it.
Yeah.
Because I hate that big black box of a TV, and we only ever watch it to watch movies. I never really actually watch that much TV apart from our programme.
I only watch television when I'm on it.
But they can be really kind of dominant, and the reason this area is like the cosy bit is because the ceiling has suddenly come down, because it is ye olde cottagey housey. I mean, it did have a drop ceiling over this, so I removed all of that to just try and give it a little bit more
and painted the beams the same colour as the boards between, because a lot of people think they should stay black, and that brings it down further. But actually, it's too heavy over your head.
In fact, all the ceilings throughout downstairs are all painted. They're actually pale blue.
I was just going to say it's not white. What colour is it? But I wasn't sure if it was reflecting off the sort of lavender curtains.
But it's a gloss. You've used the gloss paint as well.
All my paint is eggshell or gloss on all walls, because I just like either that slight sheen to
play of light, or
the gloss. But it's a nightmare for the decorators. But it's blackened by Farrow and Ball in full gloss for the ceilings. And it's just, again, to just give it a little bit more air. And I just think that whole thing, and you'll see when you go upstairs that the ceilings have actually been removed there. And it's just this idea that you go upstairs.
And you did that, you removed the ceilings. I'm desperate to see upstairs.
She's got no ceilings.
Very airy indeed.
So we've got to come back now. I'm coming back.
Do we need to come back?
Yes, we do. I want to talk about those cupboards.
All right.
So are they IKEA cupboards? Yep. They're Superfront doors.
Yeah.
So Superfront is a Swedish company that makes sort of patterned doors, I would say, for IKEA furniture. And you can choose your pattern. So you've got, right to say this, very on-trend scallop colour.
Is it? Scallops are on trend?
Yeah, really.
Yes.
Oh, no.
I know.
Oh, dear. She's going to change them now.
they were put in at least a year ago.
It's a classic. So you walk in here, and I mean, if we weren't here to examine, you know, wall by wall and cupboard by cupboard what you've done, there would very clearly just be a feeling of calm and relaxation and welcoming.
It's very human,
but that
doesn't it?
Belies
clearly the huge amount of thought that's gone into it. So you would start with the walls, you say.
Well, funnily enough, I have written a book about precisely the order in which all these things
I swear that wasn't even stunted. I mean, I know she's written a book. Come on then.
Well, no,
what's
because
the book
the thing
about?
Is that you do, you want your home to feel effortless, but it is hard work.
Yeah.
And I mean, one of the biggest things is to do it slowly. But I mean, number one, you need a house with good bone structure so that you're not having to kind of do massive amount of knocking down and heavy structural stuff. But then it's all about the palette. Well, actually, step before that is you get rid of all the stuff that doesn't have any meaning for you. So it's clutter clearing plus. So literally, I mean, I am big into stuff.
I was going to say, there's a well-feathered nest in here. There's
absolutely,
lots of knick-knacks
because
and
I think
artwork
your things
objects.
Are like, they're like the talismans of your life. They're your story, aren't they? They're your hard-won spoils of life, you know, good or bad. So it's more than kind of the goddess that is Marie Kondo's sparking joy. Sometimes
she
it's like...
spark joy in
Sometimes it's about things that might have memories as well, that they might not be joyful. I mean, like my kitchen spatulas don't spark crescendos of any kind of emotion, but they work and they're simple and they do their job. So there's sort of these different sort of pillars and why you must keep stuff. But after you've cleared away all that stuff, then it's about the palette. I mean, the longest chapter in the book is literally about the palette.
So this is creating a family of...
No, more than materials. Every single material that surrounds you, every single thing that you touch, every surface finish, everything, you detail that at the very beginning. And there are 28 notes, this is my only rule, to the perfect palette. And that is then divided up into six colours, so many woods and stuff like that, which I can't remember.
Oh, quite a rule book. Oh, you've done quite
this bit, yes. Okay. Because that, to me, is like the perfect balance. And then you can very finish with that. So you might have, say, stainless steel and brass, but you can have brushed brass or super polished or kind of hammered or whatever you like to sort of give yourself the variation, but you don't suddenly then go and add copper in because that's just going to
throw the
whole...
So you use that limitation, curating a palette of colours and textures that you then repeat throughout the whole house that gives
well,
it
Well, then
coherence.
The house is divided into four zones, as I define them.
Oh, we don't need to buy the book. We're getting the whole rundown now, aren't we? This is excellent.
Well, in a kind of nutshell.
Yeah,
the house
is
divided into four zones, and then there's a certain amount of the palette that you use in each zone, and then there's a whole thing of, you know, between your public space and your sort of more private space. But then that ensures the flow. But the point is that you do all of that thinking first before you put a paintbrush or go swatch kind of shopping.
So actually, it's back to the sort of almost painter-decorator rule, isn't it? It's all in the prep. Yes. So I go rushing in with a brush and I've painted it before the carpenter's got to the end of the road. But actually, yes, you prep it, you think it through, you get it all ready so that by the time you come to even putting a paintbrush near a wall, you know exactly how it's all happening.
But also that to build it up plane by plane, and by plane I mean kind of every single expanse of wall, so from corner to corner. So don't sometimes go in and think, right, I have to do the whole room. That you build it up wall by wall. So as we stand here, I'm looking at this perfectly centered window. So then it's like, okay, what's the treatment on either side of that? And then that becomes one plane. Then you turn and you look at the next one and build that up, but so that they're related. And so by doing it plane by plane with a sense, because your palette has already given you what you need for the room as a whole, then it makes it more doable and also kind of more fun, and also stops you then ended up with the box that's all the same colour all the way around.
So this is your mythology of how to decorate, and you've broken it down to help
I
people
guess so. It's my
get through
philosophy.
Their own your philosophy. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you know there were going to be 28 steps?
No, not exactly. I mean, it was based on what I felt, you know, over the years has worked for me as well. But then the other thing, really important thing to say, is that if you say take your bedroom, I also would say that the decorating is the last thing you should think about, because if you don't sleep well, then no amount of fancy decor is going to make one jot of difference. So it's the whole sort of premise is, first of all, you ask yourself, how do you want to feel? Whether it's in this zone or that zone or this room or wherever, but how do you want to feel when you come home? So for me, it's about quiet, it's calm, it's retreat, it's sanctuary. So that was the sort of jumping off point for everything, which is why I probably get a bit like, oh, inviting people in, because it's like, you know, well, we've said it's personal, but it's also meant to be welcoming and exciting and just sort of nice. But it is, the idea is it's calm. It's just soothing.
I feel calm.
I do feel calm, but I do want to play a bit of devil's advocate. You can't lie down. She's got no roof. I counsel you against that. So my question is absolutely so thought out. does that preclude the impulse buy? The I've just seen a cushion which I love, or I want to add a new vase. You know, does it
allow you to be spontaneous?
Yeah. Or is it done and within it's finished and you would never? Right.
Yeah, because it's so your good, house is continually evolving, just as you are. You know, we are never done, are we? We're not ever perfect. And the house it will never be finished as such because our story is not finished. So, I mean, no, if you go out there and something literally ignites you with like, oh, I must have it, then go ahead as long as it works within your palette. As the conduit. And so the hallway is actually, I think, one of the most important zones. That's a whole zone in its own right. Because it's the artery of your home. Yeah. It's like the fulcrum around which everything revolves. And so that's how we use it here.
So we're going to go through the kitchen. It's slightly spoiled by the dog door.
Otherwise known as a baby gate. And there's an original fireplace here, although the previous owners actually had planning permission to remove it. Can you believe it?
Wow. What, and they just didn't get round to it, so you got in just in time.
Yes, and I mean, I just love it. But this wall will change, and these cupboards
are going to
change. And at some point, I do fantasise about changing all the kind of the base kitchen units. Because just think
for a colour change or just because
I think actually I've been musing about the idea of brass.
Yes, you must.
Don't you think that would be kind of amazing?
Oh my gosh. Yes. And actually don't Superfront do a brass or custom fronts do a brass.
I think custom fronts do a brass. Are these IKEA units or are they
they're all IKEA. I love IKEA kitchen units, especially the wall hung ones. You'll see the storage elsewhere and they're all kitchen units because they can take the weight.
Yes.
So they're perfect and they're like £40 each. But the key is you must buy the bracket that comes with them. Don't try and bolt them directly to the wall. So there's a hanging bracket. You bolt that to the wall and then the cupboards just hang. But then I've topped them with the marble tiles.
You're upgrading, aren't you, with the finishes?
Yeah, so and we've got sides on this one as well because they're exposed, so they've got the panels on either sides, which gives it that more sideboardy look.
So if you had brass cupboards, then here's the next design dilemma. What would you do? How do you feel about mixing the metals? If you have brass cupboards, you know, the oven's stainless steel, the tap's stainless steel, would you mix metals? Are you full brass?
Yes, because referring once again to the palette, you are allowed two metallic finishes, and my two are stainless steel and brass. So you'll see the stainless steel and brass throughout the whole house.
I have to think about that. Yeah. Sorry, I've gone quiet. Interesting. So that's because that's having mixed metals in your palette and you think those two go. So would you, for example, in your palette, you wouldn't perhaps have brass and copper? Because I always think those don't go. But would you say if that was someone's palette,
then
they could?
I mean, I think anything goes, literally. I think anyone is allowed to do anything they like in their own home because it's their home, damn it. It's not anyone else's. Yeah. But you are only allowed two metallics. But if you want to put brass and copper together, go for it.
But
why
only
not?
Two.
But only two. Because anything more than that, I think it just
starts looking confused.
You get that dissonance and it's just busy and it'll jar. And it'll be subliminal almost, but that it is all those, we must never miss the opportunities to give ourselves those little subliminal lifts. So it is like the hallway, like there will never be anything left or stored in the hallway because I can't bear that. You come home and I
so
just want to come in.
So where are your coats?
Coats are in the cupboard under the stairs and the shoes were all just tucked into the corner of the lounge.
Right.
But it's just that moment. So when you come through the door, you need to be able to literally exhale and go, oh, I'm home.
Yeah.
Not kind of the door catches on a pile of post and you trip over your shoes and then there's the coats all dripping and stuff. So it's just...
I don't know, our producer just did a big sigh.
I don't think Kate's house looks like that.
In your hallway.
And how does that make you feel when you get home? Well, exactly. And you don't want to feel like that when you come. So literally, it doesn't matter. It's not about like kind of getting rid of everything to do with family life. It's just, I just don't want to see it as soon
getting
as I come
organized.
Through the door.
A place for everything and everything has its place.
There is a pile of shoes and there'll be kind of football kit and stuff like that just inside the door. But all the coats, luckily, I do have an under the stairs sort of storage, but everything else is like, how many coats do you need out anyway? Yeah. Every person needs one coat, the rest needs to go somewhere.
Try telling that to my two teenage sons and my husband. I think they've got more coats on the pegs than I have. Now, this you have posted on Instagram before your writing room, haven't you? Because I think you've recently redecorated it.
Yeah, another sofa.
A mustard sofa.
Is that where you lie when you've got writer's block? You recline on your little mustard velvet sofa?
Usually where I read, actually. Sit and read. Okay. Or do the old meditation thing when everything's just getting a bit too much, which happens quite frequently. They're just that, specifically that feeling of overwhelm.
I really struggle with that sometimes.
When I just can't think, okay, what do I have to do next? And it's like, okay, just
and you meditate then, do you?
Oh God, I would have gone insane if I don't. Because life throws a lot at you and you're juggling, you know, the juggle is real, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so
creating a space to meditate or creating a space in your home where you can get away from it all, what are your thoughts and ideas on how you do that? Because that's quite a different feel and vibe.
Well, again, I mean, interesting thing is the idea of needing to create a space inside your home to get away from it all.
Yeah.
I mean, my whole philosophy is the whole house is where you get away from it all. So you should be able to, you can sit and be anywhere. That's why, I mean, this whole thing at the moment, like for trends for bathrooms, like spas, bigger and bigger. Mm. It's probably because it's the only room in the house that usually you can lock.
Yes, and get away from it all.
But that's about being escape, isn't it? And you should walk through your front door and you'll feel that sense of escape. So, I mean, the whole thing is like, that's how everywhere should feel, not just one smallest room in the house. And it's a bit like the whole kind of smart home thing. You know, this is like kind of tech design for stuff that we don't need. You don't need your house to do that sort of stuff. So we need to go back, I think, quite a few steps. Almost.
Because you can now get, for example, can't you, people talk about you can use an app on your phone to close your curtains and, you know, put your heating on before you've come into the house. And I spent many years living with my grandmother after my mother got divorced. And I remember my grandmother was a woman of rituals, but she would get up. We had afternoon tea at 4:30 every afternoon. And then the tray would be removed, the trolley if there were guests and it was more. And at 6 o'clock every single day, she went upstairs to draw the curtains and put lipstick on. And then she would come downstairs and have a pink gin and listen to the Archers. I mean, it was very ritualistic, but there was something sort of nice. And even now I sometimes find myself, if I'm heading upstairs randomly in the early part of the evening, I will start drawing blinds and putting lights on. And it's that. And there's something sort of soulless about knowing I could just sit on my sofa lazily and have all the curtains drawn by pressing a button.
I think rituals, that's the perfect word. The rituals are incredibly grounding. It's like kind of, you know, when people struggle to sleep, it's like you should have a ritual of readiness to sleep. So as, you know, follow the night. And so as it sort of starts getting darker, you know, the overhead lights come off, lower lights go on, maybe you light a kind of essential oil burner or something, slow it all down. And then that gets your body ready to do what it's supposed to do naturally.
Rituals of readiness. I love that. Is that a chapter in the book?
There is a subsection in a chapter about that. Yes, absolutely. But I mean, I think rituals, I mean, each chapter in the second part ends with a ritual that I'd say that is something you could maybe, well, it's all suggestions that you might want to take on board. And it's just about, I don't know, own your space, own your life, own your home, but make your decisions wisely. I mean, everything is within your capability, but people need to learn to make better choices. That's all it is. It's all choices.
And informed choices.
Yeah.
Right? I suppose that's what you're saying, is not just going, oh, I like that colour, I'll just pick that. Actually
but
start.
But like, why? Yeah, my favourite question is always why. Kind of like the colours that surround me are colours that I know resonate for me personally.
Make you feel
which
good.
Is why also the book is not in any way, and generally when I'm talking about this stuff, it's not prescriptive. This works for me. Absolutely. Well, I know it wouldn't necessarily work in your home, Sophie, but I know that the way it will make
I'll take the yellow sofa. What's so lovely from someone like you who's been an editor of Elle Decoration, and I suppose part of your job as an editor has been to report on trends, to show people good, great design, to champion great architecture. But actually what you're saying now, your manifesto is, look, people, don't listen to people like me. Find, you know, apart from the rules, but get in touch with your gut, get in touch with what you like, what resonates with you.
Well, yeah, because trends are just what's out there. I mean, so the point of magazines is just to show people what's out there. It's never to say, this is on, this is in, you know, you must do it now. It's just like, look, this is what's happening at the moment. Do you like it? Do you not like it? But it's like you choose what you want to do. Really taking the time to work out what colours and fabrics and finishes and all that sort of stuff mean to you.
So we're in your master bedroom now, and I'm really seeing a beautiful palette of colour here. This is so pretty and restful. So you've bought the dusty lilacs from upstairs up, but you've now teamed them with...
So the lilac and the pink and a sort of soft, sagey green.
Nice. I mean, oh my God, it is making me feel very relaxed.
But I'm very excited to see this bed because I think you have occasionally posted this on Instagram. You've got a tiled bed head. And that's really unusual. I mean, I love it.
Yeah, what was the thought behind that? Just to paint the picture, they're sort of Victorian tiles with a moulded border and then that kind of like moulded dado detail that you can get with Victorian tiles. So it's quite decorative in texture.
It's H&E Smith, and they're the company that used to make the tiles for the Underground. I just loved the colour palette, first of all, and then just was kind of, they make tiles that go around corners. So I mean, it's literally like, there's like tiles that go around corners, there's skirting tiles. It's just, I just love like this
so
little
detail.
You've
built it out almost into a narrow shelf, which has got space for some photographs and a clock, and yes.
If you go into the ensuite, you'll see the tiles repeated.
What colour is this green? Can you remember?
This is light blue, ironically, from Farrow & Ball. But it's not blue at all, is it? It's
green. I might need to redecorate. Like, that's lovely.
It's a grey.
It's not grey.
It's grey as far as
it's green.
It's not grey.
That's so far away.
Looks grey to me.
It's not.
No way.
It's like green.
She's always blue. This is no wonder she can't cope. She's colourblind.
Suddenly it all makes sense.
So it's all got to be so bright.
I need
she can't
really
see
strong
it.
Chromatic colour, otherwise it's all just grey. Yeah.
I think you should be able to stand in the middle of any room and just go, well, does it please me?
Yeah.
Is there anything that I think, oh, that's just a bit off or a bit too low, a bit too high or whatever? And so it's just about taking the time to just do that and then do it slowly.
Yeah. Do you think you're almost looking through a camera lens sometimes when you look at a room?
No, because you get a very different view through a camera. Because that's what I mean. I don't think actually the house photographs terribly well because it's how you feel. But it's about putting yourself bodily. But so if you were doing it commercially, it's like you being the client and just going, right, if my bed is here, what am I going to look at? And how do I want that to make me feel?
So you've got to put yourself in the space.
Absolutely. So I find it very hard to do it on paper. So I'd sort of lived in this house for ages with it exactly as it was before, or kind of seeing where the sun rises, where it goes down, and then just sort of, you know, feeling my way through it. So for ages, the dining table was in the kitchen because there's loads of space there.
Yeah.
But then it meant I never used that front half of the lounge ever because there was no reason to go there even though I put a sofa there. But by switching it round, suddenly then the energy in the whole of the ground floor is much more
evenly distributed. That's really key, isn't it? I just had a consultation with a client. I haven't done it for ages, but she's just bought a fabulous two-bedroom flat. But they've extended, it's a ground floor flat, and the previous owners had extended into the garden. So she's effectively got a kitchen and a sitting room and a dining room all in this huge sort of rectangle, for want of a better word. But she's also got two bedrooms and a front room, and she had no reason to go in any of them. So we were, you know, we've made the front room deliberately into a dark and moody television room because she then has a reason to go in there. Absolutely. To watch the television and keep the sofa in the kitchen, but that's the daytime one. And then the spare bedroom, she lives alone and her family live not far away. So we've made that into an office to try and give her a reason to use every room every day.
It's very important because otherwise you've got kind of pockets in your house that have basically got negative energy in them, but nothing happening. They're just dust traps. So if you don't need that space, then downsize or rework out how to use your face most more efficiently. Because I do believe very, very strongly that most people do not need more space. They need less stuff and they need a more efficient evaluation of the space that they do have.
So Michelle, literally, Interior Design Masters has just finished. Oh, we're not going to do any spoilers here, even though the show's finished. I know lots of people are still watching it on catch up, and it's also going to come to Netflix next year.
18th of October.
It's going global for our. We do have some global listeners to The Great Indoors, don't we? Okay. So we're not going to talk about who's won or anything else like that. I just thought it'd just be, you know, this is a new show, a new format.
thoroughly enjoyed by myself and Kate and all our listeners too. It's been like hot topic of conversation. But it's an interesting format, isn't it? Because it's for the first time taking semi-professional designers or designers with some experience and maybe training and putting them in extremely stressful circumstances to be judged by you and other guest judges. How do you think it went? How do you think they did?
Well, I mean, the most exciting thing to me was that it became a topic of conversation from people that were sort of serious interiors nuts, but people that also just like to watch great TV. But then I think also what you can draw from it are quite a lot of sort of life lessons, because it's the people who listened that I think kind of made the biggest jumps, because all of them started off, as you say, with a degree of training. So they all went in there thinking, I could win this. I know what I'm doing. You know, they thought they were the masters already, yeah, didn't they? And then episode by episode, the point is you're trying to tell them, you know what, interior design isn't just swatches and a few scatter cushions, okay?
There are not only that, you're trying to tell the nation.
Yes, this is true.
I think a lot of people have had their perceptions changed about design and seen how challenging it is.
Quite often, I think design can be quite instinctive, but it is about kind of getting to know the client and really getting to grips with the brief. But then also you need to give people what they don't yet know they want. Because if, you know, there is not a client in the world that will write you, here is exactly what I want. Because if they could do that, they would do it themselves.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So you need to go sort of further than that. So it was getting them to understand that. So understand also what should you spend your money on. So, I mean, you saw in one episode, sometimes you're thinking, seriously, these people had the same amount of money, but one person spent it cleverly, the other person kind of spent the whole lot on the wrong things. You end up with, say, a room that has no curtains. Mm. But the grand coda, though, is they do a house. So all of this has sort of been leading up to kind
to
of
the final, which is a residential project.
Exactly. So it's kind of who's been listening, who's evolved the most, who really took on board sort of the bigger questions and the bigger lessons. But really early on, we also asked them to give up what they thought was their sort of signature style without saying it explicitly. But that was a kind of like, you are not the client.
And that's a big lesson to learn as a professional designer, isn't it?
But then it's, you know, all the practical stuff, all the stuff that's the not pretty, the not fun, the budgeting, the kind of making it work, teamwork.
Yeah.
You have to learn how to communicate and communicate well and keep people all kind of on board and excited and doing this thing. And so, yeah, there were time constraints and, yes, there were budget constraints, but, hey, you know.
That's life.
And it's also that's telly, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's really boring.
That's a BBC budget for you.
It was a long filming schedule, though, much longer than any other kind of, like, in the sort of inverted commas makeover show. They had proper time to do stuff.
Yeah.
And it's been fun to watch them. I mean, you know, this meant everything to these people. So, I mean, it was really hard being the one that had to boot someone off every week. And it was emotional. But I think it's been fun. I think there's been a lot of kind of great sort of tips, I hope, given over. But I think it's been good entertainment. Mm.
And that is actually, at the end of the day, the number one aim of any television show, isn't it? Keep
telly
us entertained.
Yeah.
Telly in it.
So now this is the $64 million question. Everybody wants to know, what is your design crime? I can't wait for this. It's going to be good.
There aren't any.
I'm sorry?
What?
Kate's face is literally just fallen off.
Just...
No, because I think the only thing would be to not do whatever it is you want to do with conviction. Because, I mean, if you take even like the Brighton Pavilion, okay, that is arguably the biggest theme park ever, but it is done from front to back with absolute conviction. And it's fantastic.
So are you saying it's so bad it's brilliant? Is it that a case of that?
I don't even think it's bad. It's just like whatever that thing is that you're into, as long as you do it consistently throughout.
Yes, it's
got to
look like
house,
you meant it, hasn't
exactly
it?
Exactly. Yeah. So the kind of, you know, Moroccan boudoir with something else going on in the bathroom and something else downstairs. No, this is not to be applauded.
So that is a design crime.
Well,
themed.
I suppose it's kind of, what's the word I'd be looking for? It'd be kind of chaotic theming.
But
then if you work within a palette, you're never going to have that. But if you love zebra print and it's a bit here and a bit there and a bit here and a bit there, fine.
So what you're saying is taste can never be a design crime, because if that's your taste, you're allowed it. But if you're doing stuff that's inauthentic and themed and doesn't really have any meaning or providence or authenticity about what you love, then that
is wrong. More, I suppose... I think I would pretty well forgive anything as long as it's done consistently.
Yes, no random. The design crime is randomness.
Yes.
There you go. She does have one.
We got it out of her.
We rumbled it. Rumbled the big plan. Right.
Right. We don't normally do this, but some of you have been asking if we can do a little roundup summary of our guest home tours. So here you go. So things to take away from Michelle's home that I'm hearing are you're allowed two metals, people, no more.
Mixed.
You can have a palette of materials, but do repeat them throughout your home because it just helps it feel coherent and brings a sense of calm. And finally, always start by thinking how you want the room to feel. And do look out for the book that's coming at some point in 2020, spring, maybe.
Next spring.
We'll be shouting about that on the podcast, though. You will find out about it.
Right, so just before we get out of Michelle's hair, we couldn't let this episode go by without marking the fact that The Great Indoors is now 1 year old.
Woo, we should have bought some party poppers. Bing, bing,
I don't think they fit in this house.
I'll just bring my own sound effects. And
there we go. We've had the party now. It was exactly a year ago on October the 17th, 2018, that this whole crazy adventure began.
So I'd particularly love it if you could get in touch with your favourite moments from the show. Any insights, outtakes, particularly painful pearls of laughter from me. Absolutely anything. To mark our first birthday, we might even make a little special... I say we, Kate Taylor, our lovely producer, might even make a little special episode of the clips. And we could maybe include some clips from listeners too. So do get in touch. You could even send us a little voice notes and you could feature on the show.
So come over and tell us all about it on Instagram, where I'm Mad About the House and she's Sophie Robinson Interiors. And if you want to follow Michelle and look at her beautiful feed, you'll find her on Michelle Agundahin. And if you are able to rate, review and subscribe, that would of course be the perfect birthday present.
So don't forget, all the fabulous details of Michelle's house that we have discussed today will be on our blogs, sophierobinson.co.uk and madaboutthehouse.com.
Thank you so much for having us, Michelle. And do look out for the book next spring. We'll keep you apprised of the title. Thank you so much to John Lewis and Partners for sponsoring the show, to our producer, Kate Taylor, and as ever to you, our lovely listeners.
And we'll see you in the great indoors.
Hello and welcome to The Great Indoors.
Oh, sorry. Just, I knew she was going to make me do that again.
That was so good. It was just like on the podcast. Just like that.